Deuteronomy 33. This is the blessing that Moses, the man of God, pronounced on the Israelites before his death. He said, "The Lord came from Sinai and dawned over them from Seir. He shone forth from Mount Paran. He came from myriads of holy ones from the south, from his mountain slopes. Surely it is you who love the people. All the holy ones are in your hand. At your feet they all bow down, and from you receive instruction. The law that Moses gave us, the possession of the assembly of Jacob. He was king over Jeshurun when the leaders of the people assembled, along with the tribes of Israel. Let Reuben live and not die, nor his men be few." And this he said about Judah: "Hear, O Lord, the cry of Judah. Bring him to his people. With his own hands he defends his cause. O be his help against his foes." About Levi he said, "Your Thummim and Urim belong to the man you favored. You tested him at Massah. You contended with him at the waters of Meribah. He said to his father and mother, 'I have no regard for them.' He did not recognize his brothers or acknowledge his own children, but he watched over your word and guarded your covenant. He teaches your precepts to Jacob and your law to Israel. He offers incense before you and whole burnt offerings at your altar. Bless all his skills, O Lord, and be pleased with the work of his hands. Smite the loins of those who rise up against him. Strike his foes till they rise no more." About Benjamin he said, "Let the beloved of the Lord rest secure in him, for he shields him all day long. And the ones the Lord loves rest between his shoulders." About Joseph he said, "May the Lord bless his land with the precious dew from heaven above, and with the deep waters that lie below. With the best the sun brings forth, and the finest the moon can yield, with the choicest gifts of the ancient mountains and the fruitfulness of the everlasting hills, with the best gifts of the earth and its fullness, and the favor of him who dwelt in the burning bush. Let all the rest of the head of Joseph on the brow of the prince among his brothers. In majesty, he is like a firstborn bull. His horns are like the horns of a wild ox. With him, he will gore the nations, even those at the ends of the earth. Such are the 10,000s of Ephraim. Such are the thousands of Manasseh." About Zebulun he said, "Rejoice, Zebulun, in your going out, and you, Issachar, in your tents. They will summon peoples to the mountain and there offer sacrifices of righteousness. They will feast on the abundance of the seas, on the treasures hidden in the sand." About Gad he said, "Blessed is he who engages Gad's domain. Gad lives there like a lion, tearing at arm or head. He chose the best land for himself. The leader's portion was kept for him. When the heads of the people assembled, he carried out the Lord's righteous will and his judgments concerning Israel." About Dan he said, "Dan is a lion's cub springing out of Bashan." About Naphtali he said, "Naphtali is abounding with the favor of the Lord and is full of his blessing. He will inherit southward to the lake." About Asher he said, "Most blessed of sons is Asher. Let him be favored by his brothers, and let him bathe his feet in oil. The bolts of your gates will be iron and bronze, and your strength will equal your days. There is no one like the God of Jeshurun who rides on the heavens to help you, on the clouds in his majesty. The eternal God is your refuge, and underneath are the everlasting arms. He will drive out your enemy before you, saying, 'Destroy him.' So Israel will live in safety alone. Jacob's spring is secure in the land of grain and new wine, where the heavens drop dew. Blessed are you, O Israel. Who is like you, a people saved by the Lord? He is your shield and helper and your glorious sword. Your enemies will cower before you, and you will trample down their high places.
What have you learned? Now, Jeff's translation is quite different. And it's quite different than in Hebrew also. But we heard what as he read. Was there anything in there that you learned? Yes.
Well, here we see a lot of play out of old promises of the 12 sons of Israel. A lot of we see the blessings that he put forth, Moses is proclaiming still, and actually some of the curses that he put forth, he's covering up with blessings. Okay. Like with Reuben, you know, Reuben was cursed because he was the eldest and he went to his father's bed, you know.
But, okay. Good point to keep in mind. Yes.
Just one little thing I noticed is when I was looking particularly at the blessing on Zebulun and Issachar, it seems on the one hand that their callings are the opposite, because it says rejoice in your going, talking about Zebulun, rejoice in your going forth, Issachar in the tents. So you have, in some ways, they're totally opposite. But yet, both of them are told, you know, you will offer righteous sacrifices, you'll draw up abundance, and you'll drop the hidden treasures. So I just find it, even though they have opposite callings, they're still going to be blessed both the same way. I just think that's really cool.
Yes, Ellie.
Simeon is missing.
Simeon is missing.
Is he in with Judah?
That was a question.
I'm sorry, that was a question.
That was a question.
Is he combined with Judah or combined with Levi?
Neither. Neither.
Where is he then?
All right, let's begin now. So we're going to begin the first verse, okay? So we can learn some things today, all right? I do this because I want to know what you learn and I want to know what you're thinking as well. Now, some of you made some really interesting comments. We will jive them together as a whole. All right? But the first thing I want you to notice is a very important statement in verse 1. What does that verse 1 say?
The blessing.
The blessing of Moses, the man of God.
The blessings of Moses, the man of God. The only one that's ever written in the Bible that is called the man of God. It's written in the book of Joshua, and it's written in the 90th chapter of the book of Psalms. Moses is the only one that has that title. Why would he have that title for?
Because it's true. Who else
can take that
title? Face to face. God talked to him face to face. You know, and we have this song, we have the book that we sing. We don't use it anymore, but the book of Revelations, what it says, the song of
Moses,
the servant of God, and the song of the Lamb. You notice the Lamb's not called the servant of God? Just Moses is called the servant of God. So he gets that title, very important title, because he is the one that we, looking back, have to face and say, well, if it wasn't for Moses, God would never have talked to mankind. Bottom line. So Moses is a very, very important person in the history of mankind. He had probably made more dent in the history of mankind than any living human being. Because it still affects our lives, right?
Yes.
He's going to affect when the song of the Lamb, the song of Moses come together. It's still going to affect, right? So all mankind is going to come back to the beginning of Moses. So it's very important that we're looking here at the man named Moses. And I'm very very strong, I guess you might say, when it comes to Moses.
question.
Yes.
Is there any other translation besides the man of God? Does any other translation say anything else? It says Moses, the man of God.
Moses, the man of God.
It doesn't say the servant of God. It says the
I said the servant of God is in the book of Revelations.
Oh. Okay,
okay, not in the Torah or the Tanakh.
And is it corresponding to Moses in the Revelation as well?
Yeah. Oh. Okay. All right. So that's one of the main things I want to talk to you about. And this is a very interesting thing. And now Moses is making a statement here. Now he says what? The Lord comes from Sinai. What will happen to Sinai?
When the Lord met with Israel.
All right. What day?
Shavuot.
Day of Shavuot. Very important that we keep that in mind. And that's when God met and talked to and addressed the people of Israel. And it's very important to remember those particular. It's just not the big, huge thing of Sesame DeMille's thing and a bunch of fire coming down. It's when the time, because everything God does, He does on a precise time and a moment. All right? And we have to kind of look at it so we maybe understand His timing, but He's got a consistent pattern that we may be able to say. Because He didn't talk to them on Passover. He didn't talk to them on the days of unleavened bread. He talked to them only once. He didn't talk to them on the Day of Atonement. Didn't talk to them on the Feast of Trumpets. He didn't talk to them on the Feast of Tabernacles. He talked to them one day. So it's kind of important that we kind of keep those particular in mind. I'll always hammer that in. And as He drawn them from Seir. Where's Seir?
Edom.
Okay. And He's showing them from Mount Paran. Paran. What's Paran? Okay. I want you very fascinated here. Where did God lead them into? Into the land of their enemy. Right? Mm-hmm. And Mount Seir is their enemy. Sinai is in Arabia, the enemy. Mount Paran is in Arabia, their enemy. What do all these guys have in common? They are the sons of
Ishmael
or Esau, the enemies of Jacob. All right, so God puts them and faces them with the enemy. Kind of fascinating. You put them within the hands of your worst nightmare is having to face your enemy. Right?
Sounds like us right now.
Why didn't He give them a blessing mount first? He didn't give them a blessing first. He gave them a curse first. He literally gave them a curse first. He took them out of a wonderful, blessed land called what?
Egypt.
What? Pacific Park.
Goshen.
Land of Goshen. Took them out of a wonderful, plush place. Best place in all of the Nile River area, and He took them out of there. Best homes, no good food. What were they complained about? Manna? Oh, sheesh. For 40 years, you know, manna? And they get tired of it, you know. And God says, okay, I'm going to eliminate it when you enter the promised land. Okay? Then He goes through here and He says, now, in His, by the way, I want you to know about translations here. I think we are still in verse 2. Yes. And He came with 10,000 of His saints, as some of your translation has. He has what's called Merad. Merad is a wrong word. And 10,000 also is the wrong word. Merad is an English, a French word, that means 10,000. But that's not what it says in Hebrew at all. It uses a word just means abundance. Simple little word called abundance of saints. Now, saints are who? Who are the saints?
Us.
No. Who are the saints? Who are the sanctified ones that God called out and sanctified with the blood of the Lamb, and they became sanctified.
The nation of Israel.
The Israelites. All of them were Israelites. All the Israelites are called, scripturally speaking, are called saints, the sanctified ones. All right? You remember the battle of that priest? The one that went against Moses. Actually, went against Aaron.
Korah.
And what David says, Korah said, all of the people are holy or sanctified. Well, that's a true statement. He was not corrected, he was not chastised, because that was a true statement, because God says all of them are sanctified and holy. Okay? So we're looking at the same, we're talking about the entire nation, all the tribes. Every one of them. Now the next one comes down, and he says here, and from his right hand, meaning his right hand is in control of it, came a fiery law for them. Now what does that mean? What does yours say? Red flag. What does your statement say? What does your translation say? The last part of verse 2.
It came, the myriads of holy ones from the south, from his mountain slopes.
Verse 2?
That's 2.
Do you want me to read mine? Mine's New American Standard.
What does it say?
It says, and he came from the midst of 10,000 holy ones, and his right hand there was flashing lightning for them.
All right. What does the other translation say? What did you say, Bill?
It says he came with 10,000 of his saints, from his right hand went a fiery law for them.
Fiery law for them. What's the fiery law?
Ten commandments coming on that mountain.
Right.
He's God. This myriads is that old Hebrew French word means. It means 10,000, but it's not really 10,000. He had an abundance of saints, and he gave them a command. That's the simplicity of this entire thing. He gave them in all the same order. And what did he give them? You're going to go into the promised land, and your command is to go to war, fiery one, because it's not talking, this law, the word here has nothing to do with the Ten Commandments, has nothing to do with what we think of statutes and judgments. It is an order. All right, this Hebrew word is an order. He gave them an order of fiery order, fast and swift. All right, that's the simplicity of the word. They're supposed to do the job. And Moses, he says, of course, verse 3, and he loves his people. But what is the word, is any other translation be tried? Verse 3, brother. He loves, this is what you're saying, he loves his people. What does yours say in verse 3? Beginning.
Surely it is you who love the people.
Okay.
All the holy ones are in your hand.
Okay. Any other word beside love?
Verse 3.
I'm going to introduce you. This is no shocking enough. I just want to tell you something about the word love. You know the Hebrew word comes from? Interesting word. He hides the people. He hides them. Not from the enemy. He hides them inside his self. It's an old way of saying you love somebody. You love somebody because inside of you, you adore them and cherish them. Well, it's a Hebrew word. It's kind of fascinating. He's going to hide them inside of himself. There were that he adores them. He cherishes them. That's how close God is. And it's not something that hiding is a kind of neat word, because it's a protection. Same time, you protect them. Do you not protect the ones you love? It's a natural cause to start protecting those you love. You're hiding them from what? From danger, but you're also holding them, hiding them inside your bosom. They're very dear to you. I thought it was interesting as we go through this word. Now, as we go on now, And we read verse 4. Moses commanded a law. All right, this tells us something about Deuteronomy 23rd chapter, or 33rd chapter. Moses didn't write it. Did you catch that? Somebody else wrote it. All right. Verse 5. This is a very interesting translation. What does your Bill? What does your verse 5 say?
And he was king in Yeshurun when the hands of the people and the tribes of Israel gathered together.
All right. Any other translation?
Mine said the Lord became king in Israel when the leaders of the people assembled, when the tribes of Israel gathered as one.
Any other translation? It's fascinating what Hebrew has to say. Yes.
It says the king, then a king arose in Yeshurun. When the leaders of the people were gathered, all the tribes of Israel together.
This could be fascinating because I want to tell you, this is very, very important. And we understand now, as you get into the blessings of the tribes. And we just can't brush these things over because there's a reason why Moses is called the what? The man of God. And in Hebrew, he was king. Past tense. Who's the he?
Moses
was king in Jeshurun. Jeshurun. What does Jeshurun mean? Jeshurun mean? It's what?
Upright.
We have this song we sing to you in the days of Moses, days of Elijah. And what happens in the days of Moses? What happens? Righteousness being restored. So basically, Moses was king of simplicity of the word, making things straight. The Hebrew word is to make something straight. Now, New Testament. Who was supposed to make something straight?
John the Baptist.
Huh?
John the Baptist.
John the Baptist. Make straight the way of the Lord. Make uprightness the way of the Lord. So Moses, being a man of God, face to face, his function was to make straight the pathway for the Lord. King just does not mean king like we think someone gets a crown on their head. It means someone who is in authority. Someone who's got a melech. Someone who has got power. Someone who's got a position. And won the position that God sends into you. So basically it's he. And then in verse 5 it says, and with this he, meaning Moses, when the elders, or with the elders of the people are gathered together, all the tribe of Israel gathered together. What does that mean? Interesting statement. So we'll learn it. We're going to try to learn something of why it says what it says. Why it says... Why he says that he was king of uprightness. He was king of making things straight. You understand that? Now he brings forth and calls for the elders, the leadership of the 12 tribes. Not all of Israel, just the leadership. So when it says all of Israel was there, I mean all the leadership of Israel was there. What was Moses going to tell them? Well, we'll see as this chapter continues on. What's the function of an elder?
to oversee.
Oversee.
Moniker. Guide.
What? Okay, put the simplicity of the word. What was Moses to do? Make straight. The leaders of Israel, and we go into the promised land now, we go into these ones who are the elders, the leadership of each one of the tribes, minus one, are to be doing something. They're supposed to make straight. And this chapter continues on and says that's their function. To make straight. So that's what a leader does. Someone who's in leadership should make straight. That's what they do. Right? That's what leadership is all about in the Word of God. We're not talking about industry or anything like that, but industry should also have that in mind when they do this. Now, I want you, as we go on to this thing, now there is a, we're talking about a blessing here. This is a blessing for each tribe, which is a collection. But I want you to think of Israel as singular. All right? Think of it as we're going into something that is a promise. Remember we chapter 29? And it was a now a new covenant was to begin to be established. Remember? And I told you what this new covenant was referring to? Way deep in the future. And all these promises, all these blessings, they're listed here in the book of Deuteronomy, will come to pass, but only as a unit of one. Listen carefully. There's a collection of 11, sometimes considered 12, because Joseph split in two, blessings which all the tribes of Israel will receive as a single unit. There is not one of these tribes that is going to receive a blessing and not be part of the blessing of Israel, which the latter part of this chapter addresses. It's incomplete if it's not a unity of one. All right? All these blessings is not an individual blessing for individual tribe, honored by and for themselves. Each one of these blessings for these tribes is a blessing within the tribe or within the house of Israel, which all will receive that blessing as a unit of one. You understand what I'm saying? Not one of them gets something better than the other. Because if you don't receive the blessing that's given to Reuben, Reuben then therefore is not part of Israel, and the blessing that given to Reuben will not be joined as a unity with all of Israel. Do you understand what I'm saying? We'll get to that in a minute. Yes.
Yeah, because being cut off from the people was always a bad thing.
Always a bad thing. You don't want your family to be cut off. You don't want them to remove. Because as long as your family is united together, you have a blessing as a unity of one. And if Reuben was completely wiped out, they would be missing. And the house of Israel would have a gap. And I want you to lead you forward all the way to the book of Revelation for just a moment. We're not going to go there. Don't know how, I may not be able to finish today. M, the city of Foursquare. How many gates? If one of those gates didn't exist, would there be a city of Jerusalem coming down? No. Each one of those gates will tell you a blessings that if you enter through those gates, you'll receive not just that blessing, because you'll receive the blessings of the entire house of Israel all at once. And inside of that city of four squares, what's inside of it? Now we know about this water. We know about the throne. We also know about the tree and the healing. Everybody's going to get partaking of that. And not one gate's going to be left closed. You understand what I'm saying? So it's a unity of one. Because God's going to bring about the unity of Israel into one. We know that. We have Ezekiel says about two of the main tribes. Ephraim and Manasseh will become what? One. Now, the leadership of the people are gathered together. The leaders of all the tribes of Israel were to be men of God. Upright men, just men, make straight, make like Moses was. And God, of course, is the one that is what? We already know that God's already upright. We already know that God makes straight. But that's not the issue here. The issue is you, the leaders of Israel, are going to make straight the house of Israel. All of you are going to make straight as Moses made straight, because God taught, showed, and face to face Moses what things are straight. What things are upright. Because without Moses, there would be no knowledge of what is upright. You'd have no knowledge of what is straight. You would not know how to make straight the pathway of the Lord. Without Moses, yes.
Well, there is the common teaching that once you learn the way is straight, then you don't need Moses anymore.
You err. What's up with the preacher? Jesus said, you err not knowing Scripture.
Oh, sure,
I know. They want to do away with Moses. You can't do away with Moses. They got the book of Revelation. Put him there. Now, let's talk about Reuben. It's interesting how each one of these translations is so different. And I had to look at Hebrew because it didn't make sense to me. Some of your translations, let Reuben live and not die, nor let his men be few. What other translations you guys have?
Let Reuben live and not die die out, even though his numbers grow few.
Any other translation? What was yours say, Jeff?
Same as yours.
Same, okay.
Mine says, let Reuben live and not die, and let his men be numbered.
That's the key word. The word is number. The word few is not there. It is not in Hebrew at all. All right. Let Reuben live. What kind of life do you want Reuben to live?
Obviously, a straight life.
There's going to come a time in history, quote, if I can use this parallel, that Reuben will be resurrected from the dead and will live and have life eternally. And he will not. He will be numbered amongst the living, not amongst the dead. Do you understand what this is all about? He'll be amongst the living. He will not be amongst the dead. Yes, he received a curse, like you said. But the blessings of God, through Moses, is saying to Reuben, you will have life. You will not die. And you're numbered amongst the living. Do you understand what I'm saying? We're talking about a very future promise. Because the book of Romans, Deuteronomy, 29th chapter, all the way to the end of it, is talking, well, at least this third verse, is talking about the great promise. And a unity of one. So if the resurrection will happen to Reuben, that he will have life, guess what that means to the rest of the house of Israel? They will have, right? And why was Reuben named first?
He's the eldest.
He was the eldest, the first one. First things first.
Let's start with him.
Okay. Yes.
Was there any place in the scripture where Reuben repented of what he did with his father's wife?
Well, there is a way, yes. I'll show, wait a minute.
The fact that disaster happened from it, and it had been a power play he didn't want to lose. The woman he slept with was Rachel.
Well, we want to get
it's okay. Joseph. So the fact that he lost everything, in my mind, is why
then. Let's go back at the time, all right, the story of Joseph. What took place?
Reuben saved Joseph's life.
Why?
He repented at that point.
He go ahead.
Because he knew that his father
held him accountable for the life of Joseph. Now, was that a good act for Moses, for Reuben? Do you think he really, by that time of age, kind of said, Dad, you got me. I lost my heritage. I lost my promise. But I am still responsible. I'm the oldest son, and I will save your. I'm not going to keep protect. He didn't have the physical strength to defeat or fight against his other two brothers. Who were the other two brothers, by the way?
Levi and Simeon.
Who?
Judah, Levi, and Simeon.
Yeah, okay. Now, why is not Simeon mentioned, by the way? We'll get to there in a minute. Why is not Simeon mentioned here amongst the blessings? When?
Is it because he wasn't going to cross into the promised land? He had his territory already?
Okay. No, that's fine. That's fine. I need conversation here on this specific subject matter because it's very important why Simeon is not listed. No one knows why, by the way, I'll be honest with you. They didn't have an answer. But what did Joseph do when he was king of Israel? I mean, king of Egypt. He kept Simeon. He kept Simeon back. He withheld Simeon. Now, why do you think he withheld Simeon?
Because
Simeon, remember they wanted to kill him? And what did Judah say? Hey, we can make some money on this one. Now, okay. Well, Levi and Simeon were known as killers. Right? Well, Judah wanted to make some money on the deal. And so they make some money. So we know, and Reuben was totally innocent, the whole four. He was a totally innocent bystander on the whole thing. He knew it was going to happen, not the whole picture, but he managed to talk him into and not killing Joseph. He was going to go back, remember, and bring him back home to Dad. And lo and behold, he wasn't there. So the attitude of Reuben was not an evil attitude. Reuben doesn't have or did not have an evilness inside of him. He might have had resentment. And like Ella mentioned, this is a Hebrew thinking, by the way, Jewish thinking, by the way, on the concept of destroying a having sleeping with a particular concubine because it meant leadership could be altered. But, so in a sense, Reuben, yes. You have a couple of examples where Reuben was honorable. At least we know of. If not three times, but toward the end, it's even a different story. Reuben will not be left behind. All right. Now we go to, yes.
And Simeon is even mentioned in the Revelation on the drive, so not left behind.
Dan's almost not listed, right?
Dan's not listed.
Different situation. We won't go there today. Because I'm not in the book of Revelations. I'm only in the book of Deuteronomy. Now, Judah, he says, this is very fascinating about Judah. Hear, Yahweh, the voice of Judah. Okay, now, Moses is saying something. Or he says, okay, eternal creator of heaven and earth, I want you to listen to Judah. Why? Now listen very carefully. Bring him to his people. Wow. What does that mean?
Messiah. That would be Messiah.
Could be...
Let his hands be sufficient for him that you may be a help against his enemies. Okay, now we have to go back in history. Even today, it's real in the Jewish world. They don't want to assimilate. All right? Listen carefully. In the story of Joseph, you know the book of Genesis, we'll go there, and it's a story about Joseph. But the story doesn't begin with Joseph. Who does it begin with?
Judah.
What did Judah do?
Refusing to give his sons to his daughter-in-law when two of his sons
But died. Where did Judah go? It says in the very beginning of the chapter, Judah separated himself from the rest of his brothers. Didn't want anything to do with them. He said, I'm not going to be part of the rest of my family. Wow. So there's a promise, even the future, right? We know the Word of God says, I'm going to make them one again. So the first thing Judah has to do is, hear, Lord, the voice of Judah. Bring him to his people. Bring him back to the house of Israel, the entire 12. Make him. So anybody that is not, quote, listen carefully, it's a promise. It is a blessing, not a curse. God's going to bring this Jewish world, the Jewish people, and he's going to bring them back. Oh, he's already got them. You said, no, he hasn't got them yet. He hasn't even got Ephraim yet. He hasn't got anybody yet. So maybe a bunch of Goyims here and there. Anybody. But you understand what I'm saying? He's going to unite them back, bring them back to a unity. And so even the Jewish people will not be left behind. Well, God said, bring them back to their land. We think the physical land. Fine, that's great. But realistically, he's not talking about the physical land. He's talking bringing them back to my land, my world, my people, who I am going to unite together as a unity of one. Do you understand where all these blessings come from? So you can't really have one without the other. You have to have room. It's got to be there. He's going to be coming alive. He's going to live. And Judah's going to come united together with him. Can you picture Judah being friendly? In the book of... what's that book? Prophecy. Ezekiel. Dang, went plainly blank. All right. And about uniting them together. Now there's Judah and his companions and Ephraim and his companions. Now, we're not worried about the companions right now. We're worried about he's going to unite them back together into one. Now, my question I had to ask you. And we have this song. When Ephraim and Judah gets together, Judah will welcome Ephraim. I begin to wonder if not it's going to be the other way around. Because it is not. It is not Ephraim that's going to be drawn back to his brothers. It's going to be Judah brought back to his brothers. Now, what happened to the tribe of Joseph? They were excommunicated by whom?
God.
Judah. Judah sold them. Judah, goodbye, get rid of you. Now, you see what's happening? I have something, look at this prophecy, and I'm saying, who's going to be brought to whom? All right? Now, well, I'm not going to finish today at all, as you pretty well tell. I'm only on verse, what, 7? I want to get to verse, I know I'm a little bit over time. Jeff's going to have to work harder. But, Levi. Let your thummim and your room be with your Holy One. What do some of your other translations have? It's a fascinating statement. Who's the Holy One? What was the job of the Levites? Serve constantly the Holy One of Israel. Yes.
This one says, in the end of Levi, he said, your Tumim and your Urim belong to your kind one.
Your kind one, or your holy one. In Hebrew, it's holy.
Mine says pious one, which doesn't sound so...
That's nice. No, pious is... Oh, just fine. Because we get a negative terminology in our English words, but a pious is an exalted one. Okay? It's kind of a really odd word. In Hebrew, if you're a pious person, that means you are exalted because God has exalted you. You didn't exalt yourself. All right? And we, our English has a negative side to that question, that meaning as well as the positive. But we always think of the arrogant type. Because that's our language, our English. What does thrim mean?
Is this part of the robes that
it's part of the robe. Well, what does the word mean?
It's a breastplate or covering?
This is very important to know what these words mean. I mean, they use these two as to cast lots. Remember? All right. What does it mean? Simple Hebrew word, perfections, truths. Perfections and truths. Be you perfect like your Father in heaven is perfect? Yes, Bill.
This has a reference over here. Verse 8 says... In Exodus 28:30, and thou shalt put in the breastplate of judgment the Urim and the Thummim, and they shall be upon Aaron's heart when he goes in before the Lord.
Correct. So we have now. What does Urim mean?
Lights.
Now, a self-explanatory, right? We should know lights are. You are the light of the world. Jesus is the light of the world, right? Jesus is also the truth of the world. He said, I am the truth. I am the way. I am the light. All right? So, and it goes before the Holy One of Israel. Now, he just got the reading there. What was that page? It was in... Exodus what?
Exodus 28:30.
Where the high priest is to wear this breastplate and go into the Holy of Holies. How often does he do that? Once a year. He goes into the Holy of Holies with that on. And before he goes into that throne, truths and lights. God wants truth. God wants lights. And when Jesus walked into the Holy of Holies, what did he have on him? He had truths and he had lights. Now he calls the areas of whom you tested it. Amas always means nothing but Israel tested. Whole house of Israel tested. The Holy One of Israel. All right. And this is really in verse 9, really odd. See if I can't get verse 9. Then we'll stop at verse 12. I think I can do it in 5 minutes. This is a really odd statement here. Now, what does some of your translations? It says, I'm using this one here. He who says of his father and his mother, talking about Levi now, I have not seen them, nor did he regard his brothers or of his own children. What does it tell you? And his translation is really odd because even Hebrew says, for they, plurality, have observed your word. Not he has observed, but they. So we're talking about the whole tribe of Levi.
Is it because Levi was separated from the other tribes as the priesthood, they did not have a continuing inheritance like the other tribes did? That they were
what was their inheritance?
The inheritance was God's inheritance, not right. Human inheritance.
Okay.
Is that what that means?
It can't mean that anymore. All right. I want you to keep talking about the Levites. Basically means, and I've looked up in Hebrew, that the Levite did not favor his parents, nor acknowledge his brothers or even his own children, over or above having to put into effect the actions of the Thurim and Urim in their part of the covenant. They fulfilled, or they will fulfill, a blessing in the future. The Levite will once again fulfill its function. We have that in Ezekiel. I think it's 4th chapter on. He'll purify the house of Israel, the house of Levites. And they shall teach Jacob your judgments. By the way, the word judgment, don't think about statutes and judgments. It's not the same word. He'll teach you your verdicts. And Israel your Torah. They shall put incense before you and a whole sacrifice, a whole offering on your altar. Blessed is his substance. Blessed is the substance of Levi, O Lord, and accept the work of his hands. Strike the loins of those who rise up against him and for those who hate him, or maybe hate the tribe of Levi, and that they die. They not rise again and they die. Those who strike against Levi, yes.
Since this would be a permanent statement of future,
permanent statement of future,
would that not say that one ought to monitor attitudes and words spoken against those people
at any time
who have continued to
remember
walk with God and stand?
He's addressing the leadership of each one of these tribes. Each one of these tribes are supposed to do what? Make straight the pathway for the Lord. What does it mean, make straight the pathway of the Lord? What does that mean?
To lead people back to.
Where is God going with this pathway? Yes.
To the millennial reign, to the Christ of the millennial. But verse 11, strike the loins of those who rise against him. A person could end up childless by hating the work of the Levites for the last 5,000 years.
Right. Don't speak evil against them. They're very serious. Why? Because they do the function of the Lord. They actually serve the Lord on a regular basis. Different than all the others. So we have to have Levites amongst the blessings. Without Levites amongst the blessings, what happens to your altar? It doesn't. Nothing happens there. The gifts, what is a whole offering? The burnt offerings, they call it. It's a total offering. It's called a gift, by the way. a gift. And you go through Levi's to give them the gift. All right, now, I'm going to stop there at that point because we're not going to finish this at all today. But I want you to see as we go along here that each one of these tribes, of and by themselves, are not getting the blessings completely. They're incomplete. We didn't get a chance to go to, I wanted to get to there. She's talking about those two brothers. I want to explain that one, but we won't get there today because we got to go through Benjamin and Joseph. So next week, I guess I'm going to finish this chapter. Hope you understand something about the blessings here. It's not a blessing of hope. It's not a blessing that you hope that Reuben will not die. It's not a blessing of the Judah needs to be joined with his family. It is a promise. Now, the reason why it says it's a promise, because the first verse of this chapter, Moses, the man of God, these words came from the mouth of the Creator of heaven and earth and was given to Moses. That's why those are true. That's why they are holy. That's why it's going to be carried out as a promise. Everything of this been written here will be fulfilled. It'll be done by, in the latter part of this chapter, will tell you who's going to fulfill all of these promises. Even though Reuben may, in the minds of some of us, should die, or in the minds of us, maybe the Jews should always be have nothing to do with them. Right? Or Levi, oh, come on. We don't need Levites anymore. They don't need to serve God. Well, we serve. We don't need Levites to do the blessings. We don't need the Levites to teach us anything about the Torah. We don't need the Levites to show us the judgment of God anymore. We have them, right? We don't need the Levites anymore to blankety blank with them, right? Oh, wait a minute. They have to be there. Because it's a whole package of the whole blessing. Israel, spiritually speaking, is a blessing to the world. And if you don't like one of the tribes, guess what? You will not receive the blessing of Israel. You understand what I'm saying? Unto the Jew first, then unto the Gentile. I'm going to deal with one at a time. Deal with these. When I'm finished, I'm going to deal with these. Just going to bring them together as one unit. Hope you understand a little bit of picture about this blessing. These blessings have not happened. I haven't gone to the two. I wanted to get there today. I didn't get to this. It's a fantastic concept of why their two are together. And this is a statement about that one. That's a statement about that. Yet they're joined together on the certain part. It's a fantastic story. Fantastic. But it never has happened to Issachar. Never has happened to Naphtali. It never has happened to Dan. It never has happened yet. If it hasn't happened, then the whole book of Deuteronomy is a phony. Right? No, we don't believe it's phony, do we? No way. But we have to have this much. And it's very important. And I'm repeating myself one more time. I'll call myself quit. The reason why he's called, Moses is called the man of God, because God spoke to him face to face and hid absolutely nothing from him. And so when we have these coming out of the blessings that came out of Moses, we've got the blessings of the Creator of heaven and earth. And if we are, either by blood, if I could use that terminology, or you are a companion of Ephraim, or a companion of Judah, or a companion to any one of those tribes, you will be blessed with the complete blessing of the entire house of Israel. I mean, we're so clear. We have a fantastic future. Wonderful blessings.